episode of People Kind Politics. We are doing a People Kind of Canada episode. I'm Matthew.
I'm Taylor.
And we will be talking about Elizabeth May, the former leader of the Green Party of Canada, a federal party that is awesome. Right, Taylor?
Yes. The Green Party is my party. You heard it here first, folks.
Yeah. We'll see how we feel about the Green Party and Elizabeth May near the end of this episode. So first, as always, we go through the biography, then the big stories, Gaffe Corner, and then cool person shit, which again is just miscellaneous. All right, so Elizabeth May is an American. She was born in Hartford, Connecticut in 1954, June 9th. Yeah, so most of the information that I'll be sharing with you comes from her book, her autobiography called Who We Are by Elizabeth May, and this was published in 2015. And she doesn't talk too much about like the nuts and bolts of her childhood. Essentially, her story really starts when she is around 19 or 20. So, you know, she moves with her family from Hartford, Connecticut in 1974 to Nova Scotia to become a Canadian citizen.
Wow. Look at that.
Yeah, so her parents, they opened up a gift shop slash restaurant on an old schooner, and they ran it from 1974 until 2002.
On a what?
A schooner. It's a boat.
Oh, okay.
Her mother was an anti-nuclear activist, and she shares this story from her book. She said, and this is a quote, "My childhood was marked by my mother's campaigns against nuclear weapons testing. Her commitment to end the testing of H-bombs in the atmosphere was a manifestation of maternal instinct. She was intensely aware of warnings from scientists that nuclear atmospheric testing was dispersing clouds of toxic radioactive fallout. I warned the other children in kindergarten not to eat the snow because it contained strontium-90. This did not make me popular." So, you know.
Charming.
At a very young age, she was scolding people for doing things, so. a true environmentalist.
Yeah, that's activism for you.
I used to eat a lot of snow as a kid. I really hope there wasn't What? You didn't eat snow when you were a kid?
No.
Why not? It's right there. It's like your own snow cone.
No. Don't. If you're listening to this, don't eat snow.
Yeah, don't eat the radioactive snow, folks. So, she was here's another thing from when she was a kid. And this is from her book again. She said, "Following my parents' interest, I had joined the United World Federalist in grade one." Okay, stop it there. What were you doing in grade one, Taylor? Were you doing some praxis in grade one? Or were you eating your boogers and pushing boys around?
Yeah, it was that one. Yeah. Well, what do you have? You can't just do that. A child can join an organization. What does that even mean? I can't believe this.
Well, she describes what happens. The quote continues, "This led to occasionally getting mail from other worthy organizations. One such letter from Senator Eugene McCarthy of Minnesota urged progressive Americans to donate to the National Committee for an Effective Congress, ensuring scarce campaign donations went to those candidates who had the best chance of improving democracy anywhere in the U.S. I was in grade five by then and thought the whole proposition was very sensible." Okay, stop it there. What? Yes, I smoked my pipe and was like, yes, that makes sense. I think that's very sensible. Just weird wording.
She's just a very smart kid, you know? She's 11 at this point. She knows how to get back to good democracy. Clearly, we did it. This campaign worked. This is it.
Yeah, she's a... She has an interesting relationship with politicians and politics, as we'll get into. To end the quote, she says, "I sent the committee all I had in my bank account, saved for my allowance. My mom included that detail with a check she sent to the committee." So again, you know, she's giving her allowance to like a political organization for like ensuring democracy in America, which I don't really know what that means, honestly. And also, buy a Slurpee? Buy Skittles? I don't know. Don't be so weird, Elizabeth May.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm just too normy for Elizabeth May's radicalness.
I mean, if radical is donating to a political campaign, count me in. I, you know, That's all it takes? Hell yeah.
Yeah, money makes the world go round. Elizabeth May knew this from an early age. So in 1974, Elizabeth May decides to enroll in St. Francis Xavier University in Nova Scotia. But she unfortunately had to pay a $400 fee for enrollment, which her family couldn't afford. So she ends up going back home and waitresses and cooks at her family's gift shop slash restaurant. So,
okay,
I feel that.
Only...
Which is, it's just a weird little anecdote, though, because, like, $400, I mean, yeah, back then that was probably, like, yeah, 5 million.
Yeah, this is the 70s, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. But I guess maybe the loan program wasn't great then or something. I don't know. It's just,
yeah.
It's too bad, man. That's, should have gone to university, you know? University totally helped me in every way that possibly could.
It's a scam, people. Don't do it. We are consumers to them. Telling you, maybe it was different back then. I don't know.
Yeah, like not only did I not learn anything, get a job, make connections, or have sex, like I also really didn't like it. I did not like university, and yeah. Those are the four reasons why you should go to university. So whichever order you prefer.
Abolish university. It's my hot take of the day.
Yeah, so like she kept up at her activism and volunteering for environmental causes. Her most notable act of activism was halting the spraying of insecticides in Cape Breton Island in Nova Scotia. And with the organizations that she paired with, they were able to stop the spraying of insecticides, which, and I was going to get into this at the end of the podcast, but I'll just say it now, like essentially she had lambs growing up when she was in Nova Scotia. And these lambs, she would go with them on walks, and then eventually they all started to die. And what she would later realize was that they had been poisoned by the insecticide that had been sprayed across the countryside because, you know, it won't affect humans, but, you know, it lands on the grass, the sheep eat the grass. And so, like, she ended up losing, like, all of her sheep and lambs at quite a young age, which is
that's
sad.
That's so sad. No.
Lambs are cute and delicious.
Don't, we're talking about the dead lambs, man. It's sad. Sad.
Yeah.
You can eat those if they pesticide. Don't eat that.
Yeah, don't eat the pesticide lambs, guys. So so she does eventually go to university in her mid-20s in 1980. She goes to Dalhousie University in Nova Scotia to study law. Before she went to university, because she got in as a mature student, and she didn't have a bachelor's degree, which if you are going to enter a program of law, normally you have to have at least 2 years of bachelor or undergraduate courses, but she skipped that. And one of her attempts to get into the school was to actually send a letter to her hero, Bill Clinton.
Okay.
Everyone's hero.
Yeah, that's what I think of when I think of Bill Clinton, hero, American hero even.
Yeah, no, Bill Clinton, obviously, piece of shit.
If it wasn't clear, he's a
hot take there.
Bad.
but she graduated in 1983 with a law degree, so she did it. She's a pretty smart person, I would say. Fairly good orator and very hardworking. She receives a bunch of awards later on in her political career where other MPs are like, yeah, you know, she worked for a losing party, but she did work hard. And like, I look at my own life, I look at Elizabeth Mays, and, like, you know, I talk all this shit, but, like, she actually did quite a lot for such a young person, so, you know, I just want to be nice for a second.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're still talking about human beings in the end, mostly.
Yeah, so she does some interesting things before joining, or before becoming the leader of the Green Party. She works as a lawyer for an Ottawa-based group called Public Interest Advocacy Center, which worked on consumer issues. And she also, along with her family, fought against the infamous herbicide Agent Orange being used in Nova Scotia in 1982. Her legal work won a temporary injunction, but unfortunately the litigation costs for this case to stop the usage of Agent Orange being sprayed, the family, in order to pay for these legal fees, ended up selling their 70 acres of land and also their home. So it kind of bankrupted them for a bit there. Yeah.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. And also unfortunate is that the judge eventually was like, nope, Agent Orange, that's fine. That's a great thing to use. Spray it in your mouth, give it to your children. It's all good. Safe to use. So, and then 2 or 3 years later, the federal government steps in and bans the importation of some of the chemicals used in Agent Orange in 1985. So, you know,
okay.
Maybe Elizabeth May helped that process along. I hope so, because, you know, she did put a lot on the line for that. Her family did, so.
Yeah, it's, you know, fighting the good fight.
Yeah, so she also started something called the Small Party. The Small Party, this is an interesting thing. It's actually the precursor to the Green Party, and she started this in 1980 with a bunch of her activist friends and colleagues. And the way this party worked was that they started it up before one of the elections, and there wasn't enough time to write a manifesto or set out, like, what's it called? Platform. Yeah, she didn't have time to assemble a platform. So what she did, and the Small Party comes from a book called Small is Beautiful, A Study of Economics as If People Mattered. And she said that she would base, yeah. I looked into the book. It seems pretty interesting. It was written a while ago by E.F. Schumacher. And so she got the name Small Party from that, and that was used for their foundational text for this party that they started. And so essentially, like, I think it was like a dozen or more of these members started to run in prominent ridings to unseat conservatives. And Elizabeth May ran against Deputy Prime Minister Alan J. MacEachin, in Cape Breton Highlands Council riding. She received 272 votes in place last in a field of four candidates. So
it's not nothing, you know, some votes.
They weren't aiming to win. They were just aiming to, she wanted to bring environmental causes into the mainstream, into the discussion, because up until that point, it hadn't really been the focal issue that it is nowadays. So what ends up happening, though, is that, you know, she does this lawyer work, activism work. She gets recruited by Tom McMillan, the Minister of Environment under Brian Mulroney.
Oh, no.
And Brian Mulroney is a progressive conservative.
Oh, no.
Fairly famous prime minister. And this is in 1986 when Tom McMillan approaches her and asks, like, hey, like, do you want to serve as an advisor, a senior policy advisor in my party? And Elizabeth May's like, well, you know, I'm not a conservative. And then he kind of looks at her and she's like, well, I'm also not a liberal or an NDP, so, or Quebecois. There was no Quebecois at that time, so. Yeah, so, you know, McMillan's like, no, like, I'll read it here. Yeah, she writes that she worked as exempt staff, as in exempt from job security and from civil service rules, essentially partisan staff. McMillan explained that he wanted to deliver strong environmental policy, but none of his political staff knew anything about the environment. Which is crazy, because he's the Minister of Environment. You think one person would have an idea about the environment under the minister?
Well, this is the Progressive Conservative Party, so, you know.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
Yeah, no, so she likes Mulroney, and she also really likes, you know, at first a lot of her environmental friends are like, why are you joining the PC? So Progressive Conservatives are the party that came before the Conservatives. And yeah, so she received a lot of criticism for this, but, you know, she did actually get quite a bit done in the role. You know, she played an important role in the creation of several national parks. She also helped to negotiate the Montreal Protocol, which sought to halt the depletion of the Earth's ozone layer. Yeah, so she did end up resigning from the role after 2 years, but I will get into that in the big stories section, so.
Yeah.
So after she resigned from her role as a senior policy advisor, she also worked with environmental activists in Brazil to protest the destruction of the Amazon rainforest, and she also taught a few courses at Queen's University School of Policy Studies. And the main chunk of her life, but we will not really be talking about it, is when she becomes the director of the Sierra Club of Canada in 1989. She's the founding executive director, so, you know, she starts it up with a bunch of political activist friends. And they do quite a bit of work, none that I will get into because we're more focused on the political side of her life, but I will just say that in 2001, Elizabeth May went on a 17-day hunger strike to protest the federal government's inaction in cleaning up the Sydney tar ponds in Nova Scotia. So, damn, son, that's a long time. Good for you.
That is a long time. She didn't eat that whole time.
I don't know about you, Taylor, but I can't even go 17 minutes without food.
Oh, same here. Damn. That's impressive stuff.
However, and she also, at some point in her life, she decides that she wants to become an Anglican priest. She eventually doesn't do that. I think it's either during or before she enters life as a politician, but the details of that, she doesn't really talk about too much. She does stress very much that she is a Christian, an Anglican, and God is very important to her, but she doesn't dive too much into her pursuit of becoming an Anglican priest. Mm. So she did that at one point in time, okay. Either later on or earlier. The timeline is vague, folks. In 2006, she was voted in as the Green Party's 9th leader. She received 65% of the vote. However, she held no elected seat in the House of Commons. So, So in 2006, she runs in a by-election in the riding of London North Centre in Ontario. She finishes second place behind Glenn Pearson of the Liberal Party. So, okay. Ouch.
Hey, I mean, it's getting closer than her 200 votes several decades ago. You know, look how far she's come. Go off, Queen.
Yeah. Right. So, in the 2008 general election, she decides to run against our boy, Peter MacKay, at the time National Defense Minister. You know, Peter MacKay tried to go up against Erin O'Toole for the Conservative leader in 2020 and shit the bed. Yeah, so
pathetic.
Yeah, but this time, and actually the way this worked was that the Liberal Party announced they would not run a candidate in that riding, the riding where Elizabeth May was running against Peter MacKay, in exchange for the Green Party not running a candidate in Stefan Dion's riding. And Stefan Dion was the Liberal leader at the time. So a little backroom dealing there between the Greens and the Liberals.
Hmm. I mean, what would the harm be in the Green Party running a candidate? They couldn't have been that big of a threat, would they? Or I guess it would take away votes and split them and potentially... I see. I understand now.
Yeah, no, exactly. And Stefan Dion was not terribly popular. Okay. So, however, May lost to MacKay with 32% of the vote, and he received 47%. Aww. So,
damn.
Well, 2008 was the return of the Conservatives after, I think, quite a long time of them just not running the party. It was mostly held by Liberals for quite a long time before that. So, you know, the Canadian voter base or voter what. The Canadian electorate was thirsty for conservative politics.
Yeah, it's been waiting. Here it is. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, third time's a charm for Elizabeth May's attempt at getting a seat in the House of Commons. Throughout this whole time, she is still the leader of the Green Party. She runs against Gary Lunn, I don't know, a conservative incumbent in the Saanich Gulf Islands in BC, and she won with 46% of the vote.
Woo.
However, yeah, the 2011 general election was not a good year for anyone but the NDP. They rose to official opposition. The Liberals really sucked. The Conservatives moved to moved to a minority. And the Green Party only captured 4% of the popular vote federally. So, but
not nothing.
Elizabeth May got her seat, you know, so I'm not gonna take that away from her.
It's been a long time coming.
We are rapidly approaching the present, but in 2012, May put forward a private member's bill that would create a national framework to address Lyme disease in Canada, and this bill received royal assent in 2014 and was actually the first piece of legislation put forward by the Green Party to be enacted into law. So, yeah, you know, throughout all of the Green Party's history, up until 2012 or 2014, they hadn't put forward any legislation, so that's interesting.
Oh, really? They didn't put anything forward? Oh.
Nothing that was enacted into
law.
Oh,
right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. The way you said it, I just assumed she was just kind of sitting there silently in every, never contributing, never trying. But that's not our Elizabeth May.
Certainly not. In the 2015 general election, she was reelected for the second time. However, her party slid even further down in popular votes from 4% to 3.4% of the popular vote. So, 2019 is a different story. Yeah, so in 2019, there was a bit more excitement for parties like the NDP, the Green Party. And I remember during this election, because it wasn't very long ago, like cursing the Greens, because I was like, you know, damn it, they're splitting the left vote.
Yeah.
How true that is, not too much, because the Greens only received 6.5% of the popular vote, which was up from the last election. However, the highest they've received is 6.8%, and that was in 2008. So,
right.
She's reelected in 2019, but despite her win, she decides to step down from being the leader of the Green Party. And in her place now is Anime Paul. Did I say
that
right?
Is that how you pronounce it? I've just been saying anime, but that's because...
I said anime like...
anime. Anime Paul. My favorite anime. Paul. Anime. I mean, I've just been saying anime. Now I don't know how I've been saying it, actually. I'm sure it's wrong, but...
Yeah.
Well, when we do her episode, we'll have it down by then.
Absolutely not. Yeah, well, I guess we'll eventually get to her because she is technically the leader.
Not too much, though. She's pretty fresh.
But Elizabeth May, she did a lot. I didn't include everything because, again, there's only so much you can include. But this will end our bio section. We will be discussing two big stories and then a whole lot of gaffes, some funny stuff. So I'm going to cue that music. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Diving into our big stories here, we're first going to be talking about Elizabeth May getting arrested at protest against the Trans Mountain Pipeline expansion in 2018. So
nice.
Yeah, you know, honestly, big respect immediately from me. Anybody who gets arrested for any crime, instant respect. Just to be clear,
any crime.
Just to be clear, this is actually not a criminal charge. But okay, let's get into it. So this was 2018, which was around the time that the Kinder Morgan Trans Mountain Pipeline project was, you know, it's continuing its expansion. Just for some background, the Trans Mountain Pipeline has actually been in use since 1953, which is quite a while ago at this point, and it's a crude oil pipeline, but its expansion begun in 2013 by Kinder Morgan, which is a Texas-based company, or whatever you want to call it. So, yeah, now you know. But in 2018, there were protests specifically because the expansion was going into and around Burnaby, BC, and also going directly through, you know, indigenous territories. There's a lot of concern about oil spillage, stuff like that. So Elizabeth May had attended one of these protests and she was arrested there. Like, you know, the whole shebang. Yeah. Like there's a photo of her. She was holding up a sign. She's yelling. She's protesting as you do. And then, you know, she gets carried away by the boys. Actually, she kind of like, she like has her arms in this photo around their arms. Like, you know, how you kind of link elbows with somebody.
So with the cops?
Yeah. So kind of. So they didn't like shove her on the ground and handcuff her with her hands behind her back. Like, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised they treated some people there. But so that's a fun little tidbit. But yeah, she got arrested. And was charged with, specifically, criminal contempt for blocking the road. Which, again, it says criminal contempt, okay, but it's not a criminal charge. So guys, don't worry. She told her constituents specifically, like, guys, it's cool, okay? This is not a big deal. I pled guilty. It's okay. It's all good. So that was a thing she did. And
so she's charged with it, but it doesn't carry any like criminal penalties, I guess.
Yeah, you don't get like a criminal record for it, basically.
Man, I don't I was meaning to respect Elizabeth May there, but no criminal record. I don't know.
Yeah,
I
mean, did it even really happen if it's really not on your crime record permanently and like puts your MP position in jeopardy, which seemed to be the implication. I don't actually know the details about that, but like the reason why she was affirming to her constituents that, guys, it's cool, it's not a criminal thing. I'm like, if you break the law, are you not an MP anymore? That seems unfair. Let's do some crimes. So again, criminal contempt for blocking the road. She did plead guilty. She went in court and said to the judge that she wouldn't do it again, though she did say at the same time, you know, I'm not going to stop fighting for these issues. I'm not going to stop fighting, especially for, you know, indigenous rights and indigenous land, which I respect. And, you know, you can't really say to, I don't think you could say to the judge, yeah, I'm going to do it again. So that was kind of her way.
Yeah, I'll see you Tuesday, judge.
Next week. Another interesting thing is that the judge charged her, so it was a fine that she got for this, as well as like over 100 other people who were, I think, in court on like the same day. So I guess I think they kind of all get in the same room. They're not at the same time, but, you know, they have a bit of a queue going on. Like, okay, it's your turn. But yeah, so the usual fine was $500. But he fined Elizabeth May $1,500 because of her position of authority, and that he was kind of arguing that, you know, by doing this, you're encouraging other people to participate in these demonstrations. And I'm sure he said specifically, you know, civil disobedience and blocking a road. Oh, I can't imagine, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have quite a bit of respect for her for, you know, going out there and standing in solidarity with protesters. And again, this is about Elizabeth May, but of course not to downplay. Like, there was a lot of protesters, a lot of land defenders, a lot of people standing up for what was right. And, you know, I just think it's cool to see her there. And she even says specifically, you know, non-violent civil disobedience is the moral obligation of a responsible citizen on the issue of climate change. And I completely agree. Totally based thing to say. Thank you, Elizabeth May.
Let me take a critical approach here and say that in her position and with her privilege and power, I do think the risk for her is a lot less and can, in fact, be helpful towards her campaign. As an activist, I'm not saying she didn't take personal risk in doing this. However, I do have a lot more respect for someone who isn't a known public figure, a leader of a federal party, to go to that protest. Obviously, it's great that she did it, but I think that for her, it wasn't such a risk because she is, you know, a person with some status in Canada. Although I will note that Trudeau, Aaron O'Toole and Jagmeet Singh have not done anything close to this. So they're cowards. Even if Elizabeth May took a very, like, even if the risk to her was minimal, she at least, you know, did something. Can you imagine Trudeau actually going out to one of these things?
And, like, no, I couldn't, because he's the one who's like approving and purchasing all of these pipelines. So that wouldn't go very well for him.
He buys it and gets around to the roads.
Like, hey guys, this sucks. I got you.
Yeah.
Yeah, really. Yeah, that's a good point, though. Thanks for bringing that up. And it, going back to the photo where she's elbow to elbow, you know, walking arm in arm with the cops who are like walking her off. Like, that is not the treatment most people there would get, especially if you're not, especially if you're an Indigenous person. So that's a great point. And like, for May to go there, it's great, again, for her to show up, protest, you know, stand in solidarity. But for a lot of people protesting there, like, it's literally a matter of, you know, life and death, or this is their land, this is their home, this is their water that's going to get fucked up because of this. So it's really, it's like not a choice for them, right? Again, we're talking about oil here, especially crude oil. like, we should be phasing this out probably. So it doesn't really make sense to still build this stuff, you know?
I think it's very easy for people to take for granted, being like, yeah, these goddamn hippies are just blocking the road or whatever. But it's a lot more than that. And this might be a very obvious point, but money isn't everything.
Yeah.
Except it is, actually. Money is everything. I don't know why I'm pretending that I don't love money.
Of course. Big fans of money here. Yeah, and just to be clear, oil, it ain't making money. We have to keep protesting this bullshit. And honestly, I think that is the only way forward, you know, this civil disobedience, you know, strikes, just protesting, you know, blocking land, standing on roads, blocking, you know, what was it, trains? What am I thinking of? Train tracks, you know, stuff like that, because action isn't going to happen otherwise. And we need to collectively force the government to do things, because otherwise they're not gonna do it.
And while you've stopped that train, you can also rob it, so it's two for one, really.
Easy. Yeah, I'm sure there's good stuff on there, probably. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, that's it.
All right, we'll go into my story. Yes. So as I mentioned in the biography, we'll be discussing Elizabeth May's resignation from her position as a senior policy advisor for Tom McMillan. And her resignation came right after a Toronto climate conference in 1988 that she put together and was quite successful. This 1988 one for her was very important. And then at the same time, she was having some issues with Tom McMillan over his permitting the construction of the Rafferty Alameda Dam in Saskatchewan. And so this dam that was permitted to be built in 1988, the problem with it is that there was no environmental assessment done on the dam. And so Elizabeth May's like, I don't, as your senior policy advisor, I would say we need to do an environmental assessment first. And then Tom McMillan's like, cha-ching. And she's like, what? And he just says cha-ching over and over again until she leaves the room. So
it's good strategy.
She resigned on principle, and honestly, for that, you know, I think that's fairly congratulatory. You know, she said, you know, if you're not going to listen to me, I'm not going to participate in this administration in allowing the creation of this dam, which would be, you know, the environmental impact of it wasn't assessed. So it could be quite devastating. It could be quite benign, but I mean, likely it would have been bad, but they didn't check it. So. And I'll read a quote from her book. She says, I was now unemployed, and my former boss, whom I had loved as a friend, that's Tom McMillan, denied that the dams had been approved in a political trade-off. Instead, he told the media a variety of stories about what sort of bad person I was. The media spin ran the gamut from accusing me of blackmailing him for a huge severance package to claiming I was mentally unstable to alleging I made the whole thing up to ingratiate myself back into the environment movement. So, yeah, she says that she resigned out of principle, and then Tom McMillan's like, bitches be crazy, and then... Right, so, like, there was a person on Tom McMillan's staff who was essentially just placed there by one of these companies that would benefit from the dam, and, you know, he was doing all the talking. Again, cha-ching, money talks. And so she was beginning to realize that, you know, as much as she could accomplish in this administration, she couldn't support something that would go against her principles to this extent. Yeah, so, you know, she quits out of principle. And then what ends up happening is that she's watching a debate between NDP leader Ed Broadbent and Brian Mulroney. Ed Broadbent said, you know, the environment minister's own advisor quit over the failure to do environmental assessment of the dams in Saskatchewan. And then Brian Mulroney responds, and this terrifies Elizabeth May, because he says, I don't know why you would choose to take the word of Miss May over the minister.
Ooh.
And all she could think of was that he was saying her name aloud. She says, I was the only person not running for office attacked in the debates. And so, again, what's funny is that, you know, earlier I said Tom McMillan acknowledged that no one in his staff knew anything about the environment. And so, you know, Broadbent pointing out, like, the one activist in this party is saying, don't do this. Like,
that's pretty good. I mean, is he wrong? He's not wrong. He's absolutely right.
Yeah. No, Broadbent's a legend. We'll get into him someday for sure.
Mm.
Yeah. So the funny thing is that with this, you know, so she leaves and stuff. And then what ends up happening is that the Manitoba legislator realizes that the creation of this dam will negatively affect their water supply, whereas it will really help North Dakota. And so they convene an emergency meeting and are like, all right, this cannot go past. Like, we cannot make these dams. And so the dams were stopped. They were struck down. The permits to create the dams were struck down by a federal court. So, yeah. So, you know, a nice little move there by Elizabeth May. I guess I don't really have too much more to say on that other than high five. Good job.
Yeah, I think it's good to stay principled.
Yeah. So I guess that will end our big stories. We only did two because while Elizabeth May has done quite a bit, most of the funny things we're talking about are in the gaff corner. And this is, at the end of the day, a comedy podcast, I think, right?
I mean, it's definitely not an educational podcast. So
certainly not.
Gotta keep the gaffes going, man.
On that note, let's head into the gaff corner. All right, so we're going to start off the gaff corner with some Nazi talk.
Mm, yeah. All right.
Always a good way to kick things off.
Lay it on me.
So in 2007, Elizabeth May was speaking in front of a congregation, church congregation in Ontario, and she compared Harper's approach to the environment as a grievance worse than Neville Chamberlain's appeasement of the Nazis. Neville Chamberlain was an English prime minister when the Nazis were building up and becoming dangerous to everyone. Neville was like, no, we should appease them. We should be nice to them. Mm-hmm. We should work with them and stuff. So, you know, comparing someone to Neville Chamberlain's kind of a way of saying, like, being weak or ineffective, being a pussy. So, so May was calling Harper a Nazi pussy. And so Stefan Dion, you know, he hears about these remarks, and because he had made an agreement with Elizabeth May about the writings and, like, running in seats and stuff, he's kind of like, Harper's like, Stefan Dion, you know this woman, right? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, she shouldn't use such language. She shouldn't say stuff like that. She should withdraw her comments.
Mm.
And May said, no, I'm not going to withdraw my comments. And she said that she had borrowed the quote from British author George Monbiot, who along with David Suzuki had made an appearance that weekend at a talk. So, you know, it's a weird defense. It's a quote. But, I mean, it's true, you know, like his approach to the climate is disastrous. And we will one day talk about Stephen Harper. Not anytime soon because I'm sick of these politicians, but...
Oh, man.
Yeah, so, you know, Stephen Harper rebukes May and he's like, you know, the Canadian Jewish Congress, an advocacy group for the Jewish community in Canada, criticized her comments, which, okay, I don't know. Yeah. Of course, they're an advocacy group. I don't know.
And I feel like it's more unique than the usual, you know, worse than the Holocaust, worse than Hitler. So, you know.
Yeah, she's comparing.
Don't have strong opinions. I feel like it's not a bad comparison, I think.
Yeah, she's comparing like environmental calamity, which will affect millions, if not billions, of people, to what the Nazis did. And yeah, of course, like they're different things, but the severity of these two things is, I would say, equivocal.
Yeah,
you can equivocate them.
Yeah, I mean, it's
and it's rhetoric, you know, it's rhetoric. You're trying to make a point, and everyone all, you know, gets their panties in a twist, as it were.
Yeah, I mean, we're in a climate crisis. Whatever way you can make that more real to people, do it, I guess.
So yeah, she stood her ground. She's like, I mean, we call it a gaffe because it created a stir, but she's like, no, it's how I feel. What I think.
Yeah, good for her.
Deal with it, Harper.
Go off, queen.
Cry those Nazi tears, you piece of shit.
Boss bitch. Get them.
Do you want to take us into the next gaffe?
Yeah, let's do it. This is a gaffe. Yep, it sure is. So, Wi-Fi, you know, what is it? What does it do to our bodies, to our brains?
It's magic.
Who knows? Elizabeth May, not a fan of Wi-Fi. Actually, so this is, she mostly came out against Wi-Fi, her official stance, anti-Wi-Fi, in 2011. But I feel like she's said stuff about 5G, but I might be wrong. Don't quote me on that. But here, this was kind of spurred specifically by the BC government introducing these smart meters. I don't know. It's just like a thing to monitor the use of electricity, and it does it through Wi-Fi. But yeah, for me, that's not okay, because Wi-Fi, first of all, and this is all coming from her Twitter, and I should say a decent amount of the gaffes that we're going to be going over are from her Twitter, at least initially. And then she comes out the next day and makes a statement and is like, ooh, guys, maybe I shouldn't have done that. But not in this case, because May is affirming that Wi-Fi is a possible human carcinogen, and it could be, maybe it is, related to the disappearance of pollinating insects. How? Don't ask me how. She didn't really say how. And also she said, you know, it's very disturbing how quickly Wi-Fi has moved into schools, as it is children who are the most vulnerable.
Yeah, I'm in total agreement. Wi-Fi is bad. Wi-Fi is the new smoking. I think that, you know, it's waves, man. What is Wi-Fi? What kind of frequency shit's going on in my brain, man? Like, I don't know, man. Every time I'm by the router, I get a little itchy and a little red in the face. No, so, I mean, no, it's, no. I agree. Wi-Fi is bad. Get rid of it.
Don't listen to him. The carcinogenic thing is quoted, or it's from a study by the World Health Organization, but possibly is the key word here, and they basically have to say that because they couldn't entirely rule out that with the data they found in that 2011 study that it wasn't carcinogenic. Mm-hmm. But in 2014 they said, this is the WHO still, a large number of studies have been performed over the last two decades which assess, you know, whether mobile phones are a risk to human health, and no they aren't. Just to get that straight here, people, they are not a threat to your health. Please don't buy into this. But I will say that after her tweet storm, as she usually does, and she usually doubles down or apologizes immediately, but in this case the Green Party put out a stance that wireless technology poses a potential risk to health and the environment, and further research is needed, which is, I don't disagree. I mean, more research is always good, but I don't really, don't love putting out energy in the world that says Wi-Fi causes cancer. Mm-hmm. I'm not a fan.
Yeah, you know what else causes cancer? What? The sun.
Oh, shit.
We gotta fucking get out of the sun, man. Can't leave your house. But if you can't leave your house, you need Wi-Fi. What else are you going to do? Talk to your family or friends or roommates? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
No, you need Wi-Fi.
Yeah. And I mean, one of the things is she's like, I'm proud to not have Wi-Fi in my home. But then she's like posting her tweets from a cell phone. It's like, bro, where's that internet coming from?
She's just boring her neighbors, you know? She stands right close to one of the walls and like holds her cell phone up and tweets.
Yeah. So, you know, for somebody who prides themselves on being very scientifically oriented, I suppose you could say, and informed, it's a take. I'll say that.
Yeah, it does. And like, look, maybe in like 30 years, after Wi-Fi has killed every single one of us, we'll be like, oh my God, Elizabeth May was right. But with any new kind of technology, you do often have these conspiracy things that come up, and they don't come out of nowhere. There are a lot of things that we've invented that are killing us. Lead, for one.
Did we invent go down a lead? Whole list. I don't. Is that how lead works? I don't think that's true.
We put it in our cars and then in our cereal. I don't know.
We manifested lead.
Our pencils.
Love chewing on my pencils. You can't stop me.
So, you know, like, my initial result is to be like, what a fool. But also, I mean, the scientific studies have pretty much showed that it's not harmful, but, you know, I never like being wrong, so
there's so you like just 1% never of me make a decision like... on anything.
Right. Never take a stance.
Yeah.
No.
No. Yeah.
So this is not a pro Wi-Fi podcast, although without Wi-Fi we would not be pro Wi-Fi. Coming to your...
I'm pro Wi-Fi. I won't allow this stance to fly. But yeah, no. Hey, more research. Always good. Always encouraged. But also, it's not a thing, guys. It's not. Don't.
I can just picture Elizabeth May going into McDonald's covered in tin foil. And...
Wi-Fi bad, according to Elizabeth May.
Yeah.
Once again, we are starting off with a Twitter gaffe. The context here is that Gian Gomeshi, who used to be a CBC radio host, I think from like the early 2000s until 2014, when he was let go by the CBC, because he was charged with 4 counts of sexual assault. So, you know, this is somebody that Elizabeth May knew. I think she knew him as a friend. And pretty much immediately after, I think what happened was it was initially announced that he was let go on Facebook or something due to...
And what year was this again?
2014.
Okay.
But yeah, there was a post on Facebook saying he was let go, but no news articles had come out yet. So naturally, Elizabeth May goes to Twitter and she says, "I think Jean is wonderful. Likely TMI for an old fogey like me, but his private life is none of our beeswax." Ooh. And first of all, does Elizabeth May know what TMI means? TMI, like, do you know what I mean? That doesn't really make sense in that context.
No,
you're not sharing too much information. What does she think it means? Yeah, so at this point, no articles were out, but then later that day, the Toronto Star published a story detailing the accusations from 4 women about Gomeshi. The actual case is pretty interesting, and like the trial. I'm not going to go too into it now, but, you know, maybe we'll talk about him someday and we can talk about it then.
He's on the list.
You heard it here first. But yeah, so then the Toronto Star put out that story, and Liz May, our dear friend, put out a statement apologizing. And I think she actually published it to the Green Party website. And what she said is, "I know Jean in one set of circumstances as a friend. I also know that humans are multifaceted. As he grieves the death of his father, the sudden loss of his job, and faces a deeply terrible time, all I can offer is my compassion." But she also says to the anonymous woman, "I offer you that same compassion and support. This is a tragic story." Like, okay, do you have any thoughts on this so far, Matthew?
Well, first, listeners, again, like always, my roommates are throwing parades, turning on every tap in the apartment. So, nice. Apologize for the noise background there. I'll try to get rid of it. But yeah, and if they really did have an actual friendship, I mean, who knows with like the way politicians speak? Like, oh yeah, this is my friend. Like, we met at a dinner once and like shook hands for like 30 seconds too longer than we should have. Like, that's friends in these, like professional circles. But,
yeah. But would you defend that person you shook hands with on Twitter to a bunch of randos? Probably not.
If they were a genuine friend, I might feel a bit of conflict. For sure, because they're my friend. Of course.
Initially, I feel like that's... Yeah. No, I mean, it's a human thing. But yeah, the thing with May is, you know, she goes on these Twitter rants and, you know... innocent until proven guilty. Is there any allegation of violence? Not that I've seen. Spoilers, there was. But again, at this time, like, and she, one of the things she says is that, you know, I was tweeting from Parliament. I hadn't seen the news. And also in a later interview, she mentioned that she was shaken up by the attacks on Parliament Hill, the 2014 shootings. So, I mean, there's a lot going on there. This is why I made these tweets.
I was so shaken up, I became misogynist.
Yeah, and what else? Something she said, "I'm busy in Parliament," like in a Twitter response. "I haven't had any chance to read stories." So, I think it's just her, like, her initial post is definitely a kind of knee-jerk mm-hmm. response to somebody she's close to being accused of something that she doesn't even know the details of, and her wanting to defend him and then kind of doubling down without the full context. And again, her yeah. apology came the next day. And one thing she said that truly resonated with me is that one thing I've learned from this incident is don't reply to tweets. Don't stay on. Don't stay engaged on Twitter when you know you're feeling kind of emotional. But honestly, I would just cut it off at don't stay engaged on Twitter. That's the best advice I think she's ever given.
Yeah, I think on that we should go on to our next story.
Let's do it. This is a fun one. So again, still in 2014, the context of this is that, again, at this point, Elizabeth May is a member of Parliament. So, you know, she's in that House of Commons. She can bring forward petitions. She can, you know, do stuff, do things that MPs do. But in this case, she put forward a 9/11 truther petition and later defended it by claiming on Twitter, once again, we're on Twitter, she claimed that all MPs are required to present petitions submitted to them. Doesn't convey support, and I don't agree with it. First of all,
I personally disagree. Sorry, I've put in a lot of petitions, a lot of weird ones, and I get no responses. Yeah, so I know for a fact that's untrue.
Yes, based on your personal experience and also, yeah, the statement from the House of Commons themselves. There is no obligation because exactly, imagine how much weird bullshit and like literally there would be time yeah. for nothing else if that was true. It would just be petitions for days. But that was her defense, which is not true. And she just, yeah, is not a good look. The petition itself reflected, you know, typical truther beliefs. We're talking steel beams. We're talking state-sponsored terrorism. We're talking some VHS.
Let me interrupt you here, Taylor.
I think, yeah.
I'm not a 9/11 truther. I am someone who is. I have questions.
Listen.
And look. I understand it. I get it. I used to make fun of 9/11 truthers as well. But folks, read the material. I'm being kind of jokey. I don't know. Like, I just...
That's
look,
true.
Again,
You're right.
I don't want to hate on my truther crowd here. I honestly don't know. I've listened to documentaries where, like, they debunk the whole 9/11 truther thing. I'm like, oh, yeah, that sounds right. And then I listen to podcasts that, like, detail, like, how, you know, all the different things. And I'm like, Honestly, folks, I don't know. I don't really give a shit.
Yeah,
it's,
that's
you know, 2001.
Yeah.
9/11 is not an issue to me in the slightest. But if you care about it, I mean, I don't think you should become a laughingstock. Also, it's a weird thing as an MP to put forward when you're already a fringe party. Like, don't go
Why
so fringe. We can be fringe. I can be fringe, but not Elizabeth May, who's already fringe.
Big mistake. It's just a true gaffe of a move. Not a good look. Yeah, I don't have much more to say. I'm not going to say my stance on 9/11. Was it an inside job? Who can say?
Well, I'll tell you my stance. I personally have seen the footage of Lord of the Rings style trolls at the base of both towers hitting it with hammers. And I mean, you know, they pack quite a punch. So, I mean, I've seen the footage. It looks pretty real to me. So I think that's how it came down, you know.
That's it.
Saruman did 9/11.
I don't. Is that a Lord of the Rings character? I don't.
Yeah, the Dark Lord.
Who
forged
sorry.
The One Ring.
Oh, excuse me. Yeah, okay. Ooh, sorry, I don't know your nerd shit.
No, Lord of the Rings isn't even nerd stuff, man. That's pretty mainstream, you know?
Well, I mean, yeah. But, like, also, no. I don't have don't have time to watch. I'm too busy watching reality TV for 15 hours a day. I don't have time to watch Lord of the Rings. Thanks.
Well, they've done experiments in cave trolls versus steel beams. Cave troll wins every time. So that's all I'm saying. Okay. That's all I'm saying. No plane required.
I'll take your word for it. Must be true.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we'll go on to our next story. Quick correction, folks. The Dark Lord is Sauron. Saruman is the wizard. So, Sorry about that. As I went wow. to use the washroom, I was like, holy, oh my God. Fucking like, I totally forgot. Wow. I know.
Podcast canceled.
Yeah, get your facts straight, you piece of garbage. Mm-hmm. So in 2015, there's this thing that was held called the Annual Press Gallery Dinner. Actually, it's just called the Press Gallery Dinner. Annual's not what it's called, but it is an annual thing. It's essentially like the Washington Correspondents' Dinner or like White House Correspondents' Dinner, where like these comedians do talks with leaders and they make jokes and stuff. And
gross.
Yeah, they all jerk each other off and they're like... Oh, I see my my friends here only wore a $15,000 suit. Cheap. Ooh. Got him.
It's nice.
So May went up for to speak here, and she did a 9-minute speech, and we'll play parts of it. I'm going to briefly describe it, but let me just say before I play parts of it, and then I'll play parts of it, and then I'll respond to it afterwards. It is a thing of beauty and honestly my favorite May moment. A lot of people were like, May should be ashamed of herself. But honestly, I loved it. It was the greatest thing I've ever seen. It's 9 minutes long. We're not going to play all of it, but...
Merci. What can I say about such generous praise? I want to start by saying, here we stand in what used to be the Museum of Civilization. And I stand as a British Columbian Member of Parliament from Coast Salish Territory, Haishka. And I'm standing in front of longhouses of Haida, Nuchalneth. I mean, here we are. Like, has anyone bothered to mention, I am honored to stand on the traditional territory of the Algonquin Nation. Thank you, Megwich. And since Perry Bellegarde is here, I want to mention we stand on his traditional territory too. And I want to say, like, what the fuck was wrong with the rest of you? You didn't notice we're standing on traditional territory. Like, what doesn't scream out First Nations about this stage? Well, anyway, the rant endeth here. So, okay, I meant me, because there's a couple of things about me that are different. I'm going to go fast, because last year I mentioned I'm the oldest. Do you know that now? I'm the oldest one. I think you know this, but I'm also the only leader with artificial parts. You do know this. I don't mean my boobs. I mean my hips. My hips are both artificial. The right side has a consumer malfunction part. The security guards, Sarmaine Son, you can tell them, I squeak. I walk through the floors of Parliament, and the guards have told me, Madame May, you cannot sneak up on anyone. Because this is a part they don't use anymore because it squeaks. It goes some days like a chirping grasshopper. Other lays like a really bad squeaky screen door. Ear! Ear! I'm not kidding you. Some of you know this is true. My daughter said to me, Mummy, you are to Stephen Harper as the crocodile was to Captain Hook. Only you go, squeak, squeak, and he went, tick-tock. But never mind. Some of the other leaders, in fact, may have artificial parts. They just haven't admitted it. So we're not sure. I mean, I don't know for sure about Stephen Harper's hair. And I'm also not sure about what the hell the Liberals have done to Justin's hair. What the hell? We need a global movement for the liberation of curls. Who decided that it was important to lacquer them down? And I don't know about what other artificial parts. I'm not going to go into Tom Mulcair because it's not fair. Because the poor boys, they really bought into Freud. That whole sexual maturation thing on the Freudian scale that we go from the oral, I'm not going to eat the mic, into the anal. God, I don't want to think about it. Or the genital. Lisa, I wake up thinking about a horse is a horse, of course, of course. This morning I wake up thinking this. Why am I thinking this? Do you guys wonder? Liz, hang on. Wait, you know what? Do you guys remember the theme song? Welcome back. Who knew Cotter was spelled K-H-A-D-R? Welcome back, Omer Cotter. It matters to say it. Welcome back, Omer Cotter. You're home. Does it strike you as unusual? I didn't use up my time. No, you didn't.
There's a lot unusual about your speech, Liz, but we're going to take off.
Omer Cotter, you've got more class than the whole fucking cabinet. Thank you.
So I'll just kind of say like kind of the gist of it. You know, she makes fun of Harper a lot. She like talks about artificial body parts. She talks about Freud and, you know, a lot of other things as well. And if you missed the last thing that you said, it was Omar Khadr. Yeah, Omar Khadr. You've got more class than the whole fucking conservative cabinet. She doesn't say conservative, but like that's what she was referring to.
Mm.
An interesting thing there, like Omar Khadr was a child soldier. That's a very long story to get into. I remember reading it and a lot of conservatives were like, these liberals are treating this terrorist monster with kid gloves. But if you're more of a leftist person and have a heart, then, you know, Omar Khadr is not the villain that a lot of conservatives make him out to be. But we'll get into that at another episode. So that's kind of context for that comment there. And yeah, you won't see it in the video, but like Transport Minister Lisa Raitt like tries to drag May off stage and she's just like, no.
It's the best part.
Let me talk a moment here, okay?
She wasn't that bad. It was like, but she was obviously hammered. I don't know. It was pretty entertaining.
Honestly, folks, listen to the whole clip if you can. It's really, really good. Obviously, yeah, I won't say too much more because like the clips, they speak for themselves and they're amazing. I will talk about a response, though. You know, she says after this, she's like, my attempts at being edgy and outrageous didn't work. It's a mistake and I apologize. She also said that she had been taking NyQuil, but said it wasn't a factor. She says, I'm not one of those people who wants to use the I was on cough medicine excuse.
Is that a common excuse?
Which I always use. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That's
all right.
Voice crack. That's the one I always go to.
Okay. Yeah.
Sorry, boys. Sipping on that Tylenol a little bit too hard, you know? I'm like Will Smith and Hitch, you know? Just chugging it down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
It's okay. Yeah, she said that while she did have some wine, she wasn't drunk. And she also like plays like the theme song to a 70s sitcom called Welcome Back Cotter on her phone for like 30-40 seconds. Like if you see the video, she like has her cell phone out and she's like putting it on the mic and like playing this thing. And before that, she's like, you ever just wake up hearing like old sitcoms in your head? And it's like, no. Not usually, honestly. Yeah. That's never really.
What is that about? Why does that happen?
She was completely wasted. Like, I know she said she wasn't. She also says, like, well, maybe the wine hit me a bit too hard. But no, it's amazing. It's one of my favorite things I've ever seen. It's 9 minutes long, but you should definitely. It's never boring. And like all of these like stiff necked like weirdos were like, that was very like irresponsible. Like, yes, you can be depreciating at the gallery press gallery dinner, but that was just crossing the line.
Was it?
I mean, like by their standards, yeah, it was crossing the line. It was very awkward and uncomfortable at times, but it was honest. Maybe, it was great. I loved it.
Fucking, I don't know, get some humor or whatever.
She was just casting shade on everyone. It was great. She made fun of everyone.
Big respect.
And yeah, I don't know if you can hear it in the clip that we play, but like the audience, like there is laughter. But I mean, if I was, I would be like on the floor just like, because it's just so, I don't know. There's just something so honest and weird and uncomfortable and amazing about it. And I don't know if I have much more to say than that. Taylor, any thoughts?
Good stuff. Would recommend.
Yes, definitely. Definitely listen to the clip and watch it too. Because she is just rolling on that stage.
Hell yeah. All right. So let's move on to yet another gaffe. So this gaffe is from the 2019 election year. And this was kind of around when the discussion, or rather the discussion about the discussion around abortion was reopening and whether certain parties would essentially allow that to happen, you know, allow their MPs to kind of, whether or not certain parties would allow members, you know, MPs to reopen the debate. But for May, for the Green Party, she said she would not ban elected Green MPs. Elected is a key word here. I'm trying to think of how many. I think after 2019.
Yeah, the two or three of them that are
yeah,
there.
Yeah, the two or three. But she she like came out and made a statement, or maybe she was asked, whatever it was, she said she wouldn't ban Green MPs from, you know, reopening that debate. She said, as a leader, you know, yeah, I'm the leader, and yes, I'm personally pro-choice and a feminist, but it's not my place as a leader.
But she's not, though. That's the thing. I don't know if you're going to get into this.
Isn't she, though?
No, she's made comments before saying, like she's not okay with just anyone getting an abortion. She's like, only if it's, like... She's kind of changed her tune a bit on this, and I think this stems from, like, her religious background. But I do think she's made comments before kind of saying, like, she is pro-choice, but she is herself not comfortable entirely with abortion.
I think in that specific context, she was, and I might be wrong, but I'm thinking of the 2006 comment she made when she was actually visiting a convent. No, how the fuck do you convent. Say that? Convent, thank you. Yeah, I believe a what nunnery. You're thinking of was in 2006 when she visited a convent, and she was actually responding to a nun's question like about her supporting abortion. And there she did say, you know, I don't think a woman has a frivolous right to choose. What I don't want is a desperate woman to die in an illegal abortion. And I agree, on its face, that's bad. But she does later clarify her quote.
It's not bad. It's just a stance that is not completely... Yeah, she's not pro-abortion completely.
Yeah, that and that's bad.
Are, which...
Did I stutter?
Well, I don't think it's bad. I just think it's a choice of, like... No, I think the bad choice is to be, you know, a pro-life. I think that's the bad choice because it kills people and it shames people and it creates these huge problems for people.
Yeah.
But if you personally have these, like, disinclinations towards this practice, towards this procedure, sorry, I don't think that's bad. I think that people can believe what they want to believe on these things.
Yeah, you can believe what you want to believe, but if you're going to use those beliefs to influence policing who can and can't have an abortion, which is how that initial statement comes off to me, you know, it's not a frivolous
no,
right,
I don't, meaning... I just think that she isn't pro-abortion, and I think this is like a big distinction to make. I think you can be very pro-choice and still have some problems with abortion. If you want to call that bad, then that's fine. That's your moral judgment. But I do think that, I don't know, I think the real moral abhorrence is to be pro-life.
I mean, definitely.
Because it kills people.
Yeah.
But if you yourself have some...
Well, yeah. I mean, we all have our beliefs. My question would be in the context of this belief where you're not... I mean, how can you really waffle in the middle, in my opinion? Because when you start making choices or distinctions on who should and shouldn't get an abortion, do you know what I'm saying?
Right. No. My main thing is, like, you're just saying, like, oh, it's bad. And I just don't like that simplicity. Me, myself, I think that anyone, for any reason, should be able to get an abortion. I think that's my personal conviction. But if she has a different conviction, I don't want to be just like, that's bad. Because I just think that's too simplistic and too unhelpful. If you feel that way, that's fine. I just want to say that I don't feel that way. I think being pro-choice is incredibly important. And I think that if you have these sentiments where anyone... And her calling, like, abortions frivolous, I think, is problematic. I just, yeah, I don't know. I come from a very conservative background, right? So, like, I know lots of people who, anyways, maybe this is too much to get into.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe this is an after-podcast conversation that we can get into because, yeah, you could talk about it for hours. But even going back to the quote, which, and why I'm talking about it, which is because I think you were implying that Elizabeth May is not fully pro-choice and also maybe not feminist, though.
No, that's not what I was saying.
Well, I wasn't sure what you were saying, which is why I brought up the quote, because I only have the 2019 election in the notes, though I did read about her previous stance. So if you would care to clarify what you meant before I go any further, that would be helpful to me.
Well, I feel like I already did, but just in case it wasn't
clear.
Yeah,
but I think even with like that initial quote... She, like, just in the context of her explaining to nuns, again, this is a case where she kind of walks back what she was saying, and she actually says, no, that's not what I meant. Yeah, she clarified that she was trying to explain to the nuns how, and she was actually trying to explain what you were just saying, how, you know, their belief in the right to life means that they should support abortion in those life or death circumstances. But, and she explained, you know, making abortions illegal would obviously cause more deaths, cause just a lot of terrible things.
Yeah, for sure.
And she explained for herself, and maybe I'm understanding it wrong, but based on, and I mean, she says herself, it's a mixed and nuanced position, but there's absolutely no wiggle room on maintaining the right of women in this country to safe and legal abortions.
Right, and I that's think, what I was,
yeah, and I think the thing is, what we were talking about earlier, like, I don't think there should be any policing of who should get an abortion, who does deserve an abortion. Means testing an abortion is just pretty absurd to me, and I don't think she supports that. So I wanted to clarify that.
Oh, yeah, no, and that's not what I was saying. I was saying that her personal personal beliefs are probably not pro-abortion. She is pro-choice, absolutely, but I do think for herself there is that little...
Yeah.
I don't think she is.
Yeah, no, and that's...
As firebrand as you or I might be.
Yeah, no, and I think that's fine, again, or not bad, though I do think it is a bad if you...
That is
something I believe. If you believe in policing abortions, that is what I'm saying is bad. I don't think, you know, your personal belief about it, how comfortable you are with it. Obviously, it's a controversial topic. And I do like how, again, when she's responding a couple of years later in 2011... She makes the point that, you know, if a woman does want to keep the child and needs support, we want to support that choice too. And as a society, make sure, you know, actually she doesn't. I thought she was kind of being more radical there by saying, like, you know, housing and stuff. But actually she's just saying, you know, providing birth control information, stuff like that. But the personal belief, I don't really care about. It's how you bring politics into that. And it sounds to me like she's pretty on board with, you know, abortion staying legal and safe.
I totally derailed you, by the way.
Yeah, thanks.
With this whole thing. But I think it was a good conversation. But I guess if you can, I guess, pick up from where...
Yeah, I mean, that was basically it. She, going back to the 2019 election... She said, you know, I'm the leader. Yeah, I'm. And she actually did say, I'm pretty sure she said, use the words pro-choice, which is why I said that. Or she said, you know, I'm a feminist. I believe in this pro-choice views. But
still allows MPs to put forward their.
Yeah. And I guess like.
Or bills.
Yeah. And I would assume, like, the thing with the NDP and the LPC, the Liberal Party, is that it's somewhere, you know, in their constitution or whatever. And I guess that's not a thing for the Greens. But then she backpedaled and said anyone who reopened the debate would be at risk of being booted. And also the Green Party put out a statement that's like, oh, we pre-screen MPs to avoid... I think the term, I don't think they use pro-life. They use a different term, but So that was that. After I got derailed of what was supposed to be a minute gaffe, but
because there were MPs in the Green Party that were found to have made these anti-
I didn't know that.
Yeah, anti-abortion statements.
No. Oh, no. But, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Spicy.
Research, baby. That's
I don't know how to read.
Research is very hard, folks.
Yeah.
I'm sure a good pedant could go through our whole podcast and be like, no. But this is a no pedant podcast, so, and I don't know if Taylor knows what the word pedant means, but
pedantic. I don't.
There we go.
Yeah, thanks.
That was a bit of a joke there.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So our last gaffe, unless you want to say more about abortion.
No, I think we said our piece.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. So another hot issue in Canada is Quebec separatism. So, I mean, it's not as lively as it used to be, but it's still around. So in 2019, a Green Party NP by the name of Pierre Nantel, who used to be NDP, made some comments about Quebec separatism. And he said Quebec independence should happen as soon as possible. Free yourselves from this Anglophone tyranny. When asked about these comments made by Pierre Nantel, Elizabeth May said that Nantel is actually not a sovereigntist or separatist.
Okay, I mean...
And then Nantel fired back and said, in an interview with Radio Canada, which is the French part of CBC, he said, "Of course I'm a sovereigntist. Everyone knows. And that's always been the case."
Nice. That's just... It's the screening process, you know? They got it. They got it down. No sovereigntists. No pro-lifers. It's all good. Don't worry about it. Elizabeth May said so.
They sneak through anyways.
Somehow. Yeah.
I just find this very funny because of like the thing with the Green Party is that there is a lack of coherence ideologically. And mm-hmm. so you have like the tying bind of environmentalism, but then on like everything else it's kind of like no holds barred. Yeah. No holds barred. You know, if you wanna be a 9/11 truther, if you wanna go against Wi-Fi, if you wanna separate Quebec from Canada, go for it.
Go for it.
Although Nantel and Elizabeth May both agree that though he can hold these views, he can't bring them up in legislation. And I think maybe mm-hmm. that's where the confusion arose because like Nantel is like, I don't know how to say his name, but he's like a sovereigntist. Like he says that very blatantly and May's like, no, he's not. But I think in terms of like bringing forward legislation, that's where the issue is put to rest because he won't, as a Green Party person, be like, folks, we should revisit the Charlton Accord. You know, that's no.
Yeah, just another absurdity in the Green Party. I don't know. Like you said, I mean, even coming together on like being an environmentalist party, like you can go in many directions with that. You can be an eco-fascist or an eco-socialist. I mean, certainly none of them are eco-socialists, but you know, it's even that is not really a binding principle, so it's just kind mm-hmm. of a mess.
Yeah, the Green Party is a mess, a beautiful hot mess, but yeah,
love to see it.
Yeah, so I think that will end it for Gaff Corner. We're gonna go into Cool Person Shit, our miscellaneous section. Hold on to your butts. All right, so Cool Person Shit, our miscellaneous section. A little anecdote about our boy Bill Clinton, who we already mentioned previously. For those who aren't in the know, Bill Clinton is a rapist.
Oof.
Allegedly. And I'm not talking about the Monica Lewinsky thing. You know, that's bad in and of itself. But, you know, he was on the Epstein plane, the jet, quite a few times. And he's a known philanderer. Again, no, you know, philandering is great. Should do it all the time.
Should do.
But, well, I don't know. No, The thing with Bill Clinton, though, is that Elizabeth May just adores him, and she really wanted him to get him to speak at one of the conferences that she was holding in Montreal, and she writes in her book, "Yes, at the last minute, Clinton replied to my invitation, and I had the surreal experience of organizing private jets to get him to Montreal in time to speak on the very last day of negotiations."
Excuse me, private jets? Talk about emissions.
She writes in her book, she's like, you know, ex-presidents, they're not allowed to fly commercial for security reasons.
Okay. So that's how she justifies it, huh?
Yeah, but also, like, if you're president, then that's your own damn fault. You got to live with that shit, man. Carry a katana with you wherever you go, you know? That's not on the taxpayer. That's on you. No one made you run for president, bitch.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just laughed at the whole, like, she's like, she talks a lot about like how she has to get a private jet for Bill Clinton. And I'm like, yeah, of course, that private jet. Never forget, folks, Bill Clinton was on the Epstein plane a lot of times. So,
yeah, a lot of times.
I think this will take us, though, to our last little thing here. Taylor, take us away.
Yeah, So this last little thing is fun. You know, you've gotten bits and pieces of it throughout, but this is just probably the coolest shit of all, which is nonpartisanship. In her book specifically, May says, "My vision is not drawn from any tract or ideology, but comes from paying attention throughout 6 decades of living," which is reflective of, you know, her general politics. I feel like her waffling, her, you know, experience in the, what was the Progressive Conservative Party at the time, and kind of her mentality is, especially being an environmentalist, you know, whatever I can do to further that, I will do. I'm not a fan personally. This was especially reflected in the Green Party's 2019 slogan, which was extremely bad and extremely dunked on Twitter. And it was not left, not right, forward together. Nice. And I'm just, I really hate it for a couple of reasons. The biggest one for me is, like, I feel like if you're passionate about the environment and climate crisis and all of that stuff, you kind of have to acknowledge that it is a partisan issue. I mean, it's our earth, sure, but you have to think about why those things are happening, why, you know, fighting the climate crisis isn't being prioritized. You have to think about who's being impacted the most here in Canada, you know, Indigenous peoples especially. Mm-hmm. So for her specifically, and the Green Party as well, to just take this nonpartisan approach doesn't really sit well with me. But what are your thoughts, Matthew?
Well, I think a distinction has to be made, because I'm also of the mind that nonpartisanship is kind of a good thing, but not in the sense that you're non-ideological, right? So you can be like a diehard liberal, and that's kind of weird to me, or diehard NDP person. And that's weird to me. I think that undergirding these parties is an ideology. And I think ideology is important because it puts forward a coherent set of beliefs and ideas and values that you can put into political action. So I think she confuses nonpartisanship with being non-ideological, which I think there's a big difference between the two, because I'm very leftist, left socially, socialistically, whatever, fucking whatever.
That's definitely not a word.
Leftwardly ideological, but I don't have any party affiliation strongly.
Right.
So with Elizabeth May saying, you know, like, I'll work with whatever party, I think that there's something admirable in there, but I do think having an ideological base to go off of, and again, like, ideologues can be annoying as hell. I wouldn't say I'm an ideologue, but there is something to be said about having a coherent set of beliefs and values that mesh together and that propel political action.
Yeah, you put that really well, actually. Oh my God, so smart. Great job, Matthew. Especially with regards to ideology, like, you, like, that's probably my biggest problem with the left. Not the left, sorry. Well, actually, kind of the left. But the Green Party, specifically, because it's like their ideology is to be nonpartisan, or, you know, with Elizabeth May, she's saying, I don't have one, you know, I just live my life and that's it. But people who say they don't have an ideology, like, bro, that is the ideology. Open your mind.
Well, yeah, because Trudeau was kind of the same thing. Like, he was I don't have an ideology. And, like, again, that's like, she's obviously a very principled person in regards to the environment, and she does, like, her party platform for 2019, you know, I bagged on the Greens quite a few times, but, like, when I went through it again, there were actually a lot of progressive things put within it. So I think she does have some ideological affiliation to the left. I just think that has to be a bit more firmly stated, because you can be an environmentalist and be a conservative or neoliberal and do things that are environmentally impactful, but to which degree are they is debatable, like being like against single-use items. If that's all that you do as an environmentalist, hell, you could be very easily conservative. Those two don't conflict, really.
Yeah, I feel like if you're somebody whose environmentalism, the furthest it goes is, again, you know, we've harped on this, but those individual actions, or even looking at the corporations, but kind of, again, doing something like a carbon tax, which actually doesn't focus on reducing emissions or anything really material, you know, I have to question what your motives are. And they're probably not to save the environment. So, yeah.
Yeah, so... Yeah, I would say I'm conflicted on what you're saying, because I do think ideologues can be quite tedious, and I've dealt with dogmatist ideologues before. So, but I do think there has to be some kind of coherence to your worldview. Not definitely completely like shut down and stuff, but just, you know, if you're not coherent in what you believe, then there is room for these weird contradictions to open up. And I think that's been the case with Elizabeth May.
I agree, yeah. And I don't think, I mean, there's having beliefs, you know, rooted in an ideology which you're passionate about, which you hold to, you know, there's integrity, and then there's being dogmatic. I think those are two different things. Any political party, that's successful, there needs to be an understanding of the ideology of that party.
Unless you're the liberals, and then it's just like, well, it's neoliberal ideology, but they just were like, no, we're just left, man. We just love people.
That's how they portray themselves, yeah. But they know better. Of course they do. It's good stuff to think about. With May, you know, I do think her stance is definitely reflected in the Green Party. You know, when there is progressive stuff, that's great, but there's still a lot more they could be doing, in my opinion. But I could say that about literally every party, and I do, and will.
Yeah, we're here to bag on every party in Canada, except I will never bag on the People's Party of Canada, because that's the true Canadian party, always with you, Maxime Bernier, gone but not forgotten.
Is he okay? Is he alive?
Reports vary.
Okay. I hope so.
Yeah, I think that's going to wrap up our episode, though, unless you have more to say, Taylor?
No, I'm pretty good. Yeah, that was an episode. It was pretty interesting, you know. I'm a big fan. 5 out of 5 stars from me on the iTunes.
Okay, well, the real question is, how many maple leaves out of 10 would you give Elizabeth May? And again, 10 is the best, 1 is the worst. So... how many maple leaves would you give
her? I really despise this question.
I know you do.
4.
Ooh.
No. 3.
Ooh. Ooh, spicy.
What did I give Trudeau?
10.
All right. 3.5. 3.5 stars. That's my hot take. Yeah. I don't know. I'm like, this was a mistake. Maple Leafs were a mistake. I'm never going to rate anyone above 5.
Okay.
We'll see.
I'm giving her a 7.
Whoa. That's the highest rating yet. 7. Was it the speech that kind of was that?
Yeah,
it
was the speech. And it's also the fact that she's done a lot. Like, I know that her main concern is the environment. And for me, like, if you really want to address the environment, then you have to address the undergirding systems that undergird it. But... you know, all that put aside, she did a lot of work, and I have to admire someone that is that committed to something so important. So, you know, there are weird things about her. There are things that I have critiques about, but ultimately, I really like her, and I'm not just being a soy boy like, yeah, she's a woman, so 10 out of 10, or any of that. But nice. I don't know why I'm addressing 4chan in this podcast all the time. I'm trying. I'm scared of 4chan.
What a soy boy.
Or 8chan, or whatever the hell it is now.
They're separate things.
No, her speech was really interesting. No, I just, you know, like with Jagmeet Singh, like, again, there are critiques to be levied, but ultimately, I really like Elizabeth May a lot more than I like Singh, Trudeau, or O'Toole.
How dare you?
Yeah. I wish she had been part of a more effective party, and that she, I mean, again, there are critiques to be made, but I would say, yeah, I would say a well-earned 7 out of 10 maple leaves for me.
You heard it here first, folks. Highest rating yet.
Yes. Yeah. So as always, you can find us at peoplekindpolitics.com. That's our website, peoplekindpolitics.com. From there, you can find links to listen, links to subscribe, links to like. You can find our social media pages on there. Yeah, that's the hub, folks. Yeah. That's where all the action happens. We release an episode every Tuesday, and we alternate between PeopleKind News and PeopleKind of Canada. And Taylor, we will have to unfortunately cover the leader of the Québécois Party. Gilles Duceppe, the old one. I don't actually know his name, because that's how much I care about the Quebec Bloc Québécois.
I didn't agree to this. I want to cover Maxime Bernier. I didn't agree to this.
Okay.
Listen, Elizabeth May isn't the leader now either. So I think, you know, People's Party, then we can do Québécois.
We can't be so Anglophone, though. We have to cover the French.
But Maxime Bernier is French. How
Maxime Bernier is an alien. He's a reptile.
Fine. We can do Quebecois, so people can listen to our mispronunciations.
Yeah, it's gonna be a mess this episode, but we will, because we are covering all the party leaders. So we will be unfortunately covering Quebecois, which are arguably not even a federal party, although technically they are. We're gonna have some fun with it. It's gonna be very offensive to any French speakers here.
Watch out.
Yeah, and it will be in English, of course, so you're going to have to grit your teeth together as we go through our analysis and discussion. But that will be in a couple weeks. Our next episode will be PeopleKind News episode. Yeah, that's really all that I have to say. Taylor, any final thoughts?
That's it. I'm just sad for those sheep still, you know? Didn't stop thinking about them.
Yes, the poisoning of the lambs. So,
damn.
All right. So, as always, folks, this has been your place for Canadian regurgitation.